succession number 27741, reel 5.
This is reel 5, Michael LePage.
Interestingly enough, we still have a reunion of HMS Hunter's ship's company every year in Portsmouth, Pompey, at the Sailor's Rest home. I've been going to it, but I used to go especially when a friend of mine who was another pilot used to go, but now that there are no other pilots, I didn't know, as you were asking, I didn't know the ship's company so well. I've met them all now recently, and they're a lovely bunch of chaps. But, Portsmouth's a long way, and I don't really know them as well as I would know others, and I feel I didn't go last year. But they remember that incident of the two of their charmers being swept over the bows, and that was in southern France.
So you come back after this incident and the planes. What happens when in an active operational squadron when someone dies in that way? Is there any ceremony?
We didn't have a chaplain on board, I'm afraid. We just kept silent, 2 minute silence, I think, or something. I really don't remember very much. I mean, we lost two pilots there. But I think that at that time, you know, in war, you accept these things much more readily than we would now. I mean, if anybody in your acquaintance dies now, there's a funeral and lots of time to grieve and so on, but there's no time to grieve there. You carry on with the job. And that wasn't the first. There were other occasions when we lost people and didn't come back. And that's war.
So Operation Dragoon is now underway. Mm. You're conscious of what's going on. What is your role and what is the hunter's role now?
Support for the troops landing. Bombing, strafing the German columns, retreating up the Rhone Valley. I can remember doing a low-level something, I don't know what it was, but I came over the brow of a hill and suddenly saw in front of me the three-tiered aqueduct Pont du Gard, which I had in my French book at school. Gracious me, it does exist. You know, there it is. And when I later lived in Lyon, I went back to see it, and it was all these incidents came back to me. But yes, we were supporting the invasion. We lost, as I say, two aircraft, if not more, from deck landing. So in the middle of the operation, three of us had to go to Corsica to fetch some reserve aircraft that had been stored there for this emergency.
How did you go to Corsica from the Hunter?
You may well ask. Yes. We were transferred to an American destroyer, Scharnbrook, and I suppose it must have gone across in a whaler, but across to the Scharnbrook. From there we steamed down to Ajaccio, and I can remember the wardroom on the, where the Americans were fascinated to have a Seafire pilot on board. Gee, do you fly? That was the only one engine, you know. quite a lot of Negro personnel serving at table. A great big black arm came down with your with your plate of meat, masses of meat and jam with it, obviously. You know. But we... You can make a noise. Washing machine upstairs.
Washing machine.
Anyway, we got to Corsica, to Ajaccio, and disembarked, and spent the night in a hotel. And that happened to be the night when Paris was liberated. And so the whole place went mad. I've still got the leaflet in my diary. Paris est libéré, in huge, great type across this a flyer which was handed round the town. But we spent the night in a hotel.
Were you three of us lauded as pilots?
No, nobody knew who we were, what we were doing by then. The next day we got transport round to...
Did you join in the festival?
Oh, yes, we had a little bit of something. But I think most of... We walked up a hill behind the town and got away from all the razzmatazz. I mean, it wasn't so much, we were pleased, obviously, but we didn't know anybody there or anything. So we went for a good, nice walk, evening walk. But we got transport round to this place on the other, on the east coast of Corsica, which, because Corsica is so mountainous that it's difficult to find landing grounds. But this one on the east coast, I think it's called Gisonakia. And there we found the three aircraft, or no, I think there were more, some for Stalker as well. But it was a very short runway. There must have been somebody there to service them and get them ready for flying. But again, we had to do a sort of deck landing takeoff by putting the brakes on, revving up the engine, hoping we'd miss the trees at the end of the runway. Fortunately, we did. When we got back to the fleet near south of France, it was getting dark. I think it was that accident I just mentioned, the chap who'd landed on badly. We were directed to go ashore, so we landed on the airstrip which the Americans had made near Cape Cavalier, somewhere down there. So we had two nights ashore in tents. That was lovely.
What, sitting under?
Under a cork tree.
Oh, right.
And we did a bit of fraternizing there. I went out and met some French women. They were pleased as punch to see us. They wanted us to go and have a vin d'honneur. But
I hope you did.
I can't remember now whether we allowed ourselves to have any vin. But it was lovely to get away from the noise of the carrier. As I say, the air conditioning system is very noisy in a carrier. In fact, I used to sleep on the catwalk. I had a camp bed, and the catwalk was a sort of metal platform about 6 feet below the flight deck on each side. And so when the batsman who was guiding the aircraft in, he had a safety net to jump into if he had to. But the catwalk right forward was a wonderful, wonderful place. I used to watch the dolphins playing in the bow wave of the carrier because it was quite far forward, you know, overlooking the bow.
And quiet and
cool. Beautiful. But, we had these two nights ashore at in the south of France, which I, again, revisited when I was in France some years ago.
Did you find the place where you'd landed?
Just about, yes. I asked the locals, did they remember an airstrip? Not, of course, they were mostly too young to remember, but there was one old lady who said, yes, she remembered the airstrip being down there, or in the vines, the vineyards.
So there wasn't a romantic encounter with her?
No, there was nothing left now.
I mean for you when you were there.
Oh, no.
Three handsome young pilots.
No, I don't know whether it's the same, not the same woman I met, sadly. I don't suppose she was there. I mean, this was, 1970-something, so that was 30 years after.
Mm. One thing I should have asked earlier, the difference in atmosphere between the British ship and the American ship, you said there were lots of Negroes, but did it strike you as a very different sort of Navy? Did the Americans then have a reputation of being a bit slapdash?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Did you notice this? Were you slightly snooty as a sort of British pilot?
Not altogether, no, I don't think we... We sat and chatted with the crew on the forward deck in the bows. I can remember talking with some of them, but less difference between officers and men. Obviously, they got on well together. There was only one very short, just a short incident.
So you're back. Let's go. So now you're the three of you. You fly back to join the Hunter.
The ship, yes, I got that after, yes.
And how far advanced is Dragoon now, the operation?
The Germans were retreating very quickly, so when we got out of range, we couldn't do any more. We went back to, where did we go? Probably back to Gibraltar. Here's my bombardment spotting with HMS Ramillies. That was an incident.
Was that during Dragoon?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
Well, they're saying there were two methods when the Navy wanted to bombard a target ashore. HMS Rao. The battleships didn't have much to do at this time. They're far too big, they get 16-inch guns. But they did try occasionally bombard targets ashore. Either the aircraft was asked to spot and tell the gunners on the ship where the shot had landed so that they could make the correction, or the other method was for the pilot to direct the gunners and say up 100 or left 100 or whatever. And the gunners didn't like that because they liked to be able to control their own. And I remember a sort of rather fed up kind of voice coming over the RT when I was doing this practice. I see there was no chute. They must have shot because I did the spotting anyway.
So you were flying over enemy lines, watching where the...
Yeah, somewhere near whatever target it was they were bombing. I forget what it was now.
Was there any aerial resistance to you? There were no other German fighters about?
No, nothing at all.
So you had complete control of the skies. That was not a worry.
Well, there was ground to air. I mean, there were these
but
flak coming up occasionally. That's what got the senior pilot. You know, he was shot by ground to air firing.
But you weren't keeping your eyes peeled for enemy fighters coming at
you? No, nothing. No, we had control of the skies, as over Normandy. Mm.
Did you actually fly over the landing as it took place?
No, it had already gone in when we did our first recce, beach cover, August the 16th. I don't know when the attack actually started. I see I dropped a bomb on the 16th of August. Beach cover and 500-pound bomb.
Can you remember doing that?
No.
How did the plane... Can you remember how the plane behaved?
No, can't remember any details at all. Search for survivors. Ooh. No contact.
What date was that?
That was July 23rd. I think that was off Gibraltar. Dummy bomber attack... Oh yes, the dive bombing was August the 1st. That was the first exercise for Dragoon.
Do you remember that?
No. Bombardment spotting for HMS Caledon, no shoot. Tactical reconnaissance, Lemuy, do you know the MUY? And Grimaud, that must have been up country a bit, but that must have been after they'd made a few advances.
Didn't you do a photo reconnaissance of Marseille?
I did, yes. When was that? August the 26th, long after they'd gone. And the Germans had blown up all the installations on Marseille harbour and retreated. And the powers that be wanted to know what damage there was. So I was given a camera in the belly of the aircraft and climbed to 12,000 feet and to fly straight and level over the top of Marseille, press the camera to it, and off we went. And I've still got the copies of those photographs, which are very interesting to see how all the craters all along the installation of the harbour, and one or two ships sunk on their sides and so on. And I, as I probably told you, I've got a friend who's now in Marseille. He sent me a map of the harbour as it is today. It's very interesting to compare the two exactly the same.
And were you expecting any? Because flying straight and level...
No, there was no opposition then at all.
Could there have been?
No, I don't think so. No.
You knew that this would be a piece of cake?
Fairly a piece of cake, yes. Mm. Because this was August, the end of August, you see. The thing had been going on for 3 weeks or more. The Germans were all halfway to Lyon by then, I think. Mm.
So the operation was over... What happened to the Hunter then?
Hunter, I was beginning to get jittery about landings, and I had one or two misses.
Can you tell me about what exactly happened?
Well, I think the worst one was one that decided me was when I was saying about how the Seafire floated, and on one occasion I suppose I was a little bit too fast, and I started floating over the deck. Realized I was not going to come down at all, so I opened the throttle and went round again. I think the people on the barrier must have been quick enough to get the barrier down, Otherwise, my undercarriage would have caught in it. But anyway, I survived and came in. But the CEO decided probably I'd be safer on Hellcats, which were much easier aircraft to land on.
Was this a? I mean, was there any stigma attached to this? If he said, did you feel you'd let the side down?
Well, yes, I was rather. But I think we were all, you know, after operating, you tend to get a bit. There were a lot of jittery. I don't think it was always recognised that about 3 weeks of operating, you needed a rest after it. Well, we had only had 2 weeks, I suppose, but I was obviously was not reacting to the what needed to be done to get the aircraft down on a carrier on the deck, doing it in the proper way. So. And the Hellcat, being designed as a fleet carrier, had the tail, the hook coming out aft of the tail wheel. Have I said all this before on the screen?
We talked about that briefly before.
Not on the tape.
Yeah.
Anyway, cut a long story short, when we got to Alexandria, we steamed off up to the other end of the Med and went into Alexandria Harbour. And I was put ashore and to the HMS Decayla, which was just beyond Mex, towards El Alamein, actually. Well, of course, by this time, Alamein was all over. And I did some training on the Hellcat and then joined 800 Squadron on HMS Emperor.
I just want to go back a bit. I'm just curious about how you were told that you were no longer going to fly Seafires. Did you have any part of that decision making?
No.
The CEO called you in and said, that's it.
I think so. I really can't remember the detail, I'm afraid. It's just that.
And you were relieved, probably, I imagine?
Well, looking back on it, certainly I was, yes, because I don't think I had any prangs after that. Well, I don't think I'd had any before, but it was just that I got pretty near. There were others in the squadron who'd pranged the aircraft.
And if they pranged, were they then taken off them straight away?
Not necessarily, no. Mm. But we had several barriers and people going crooked on landing.
Would you go up and watch the landings if you could, if you were on board when other people were coming in?
Don't think we did. Yes, we did. I watched from the catwalk because I remember on one occasion we had a New Zealand pilot in the squadron and he was coming in. Just after the round down, and suddenly his prop stopped dead, and he just went straight into the drink. And I remember watching that chap called Hunt, and he didn't survive.
Would the ship turn back?
No. Well, I don't think it was reckoned he'd be survive, because when you go straight in with a bang. But that was a. No, if you're in a squadron, you know, we were always four carriers, hunter, stalker, attacker, and we had two different classes. They were the sort of stalker class. The Emperor was what's called the ruler class. There was Emperor, Shah, Begum, Khedive, and I was on the Emperor. And that was 800 Squadron, a very prestigious squadron, being one of the first to be formed, and only just been disbanded last year, I believe, at Yeovilton. But on this occasion, I joined as in Decayla, in Alexandria.
So you left your squadron.
I left 807 Squadron.
Which was obviously a sad moment.
Yes.
You were saying goodbye to your family, I imagine.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you know, we lived rather lightly to relationships you had to in those days. You never knew when they were going to end. But I made good friends on Emperor with 800 Squadron.
So you landed in Alexandria. What was Alexandria like then? Can you remember it?
I remember the suburbs going out through Mex. On one occasion I was in a 1,500 weight army truck being taken out, and suddenly the driver, we had to go rather slowly in the traffic. Driver suddenly stopped and leapt out and went round the back, and a local had jumped aboard and pinched my parachute bag.
Were you going to call him a wog?
I was going to call him a wog, yes, but that's not a very complimentary
That would have been the term you used then.
It would have been then, yes. Wily Oriental gentleman.
So then you went to the shore base, and now you're retrained again in the Hellcat.
In the Hellcat, yes.
Can we go through that? What was it like for a start to come now? Well,
back to like to Harvard, you see. The cockpit was an American-designed aircraft, so I just had to do a slight adjustment on the Hellcat, but it was not all that difficult. I had, it was a bit of a wait. I had to watch them all go off on an operation before I was ready to go. But eventually we went off to Milos, one of the islands in the Aegean.
Sorry, hang on. You've trained now.
We've
scooted.
I've adjusted
through that training.
Yes.
It wasn't difficult. I mean, you found getting back into the...
I did quite a lot of dummy deck landings and getting used to the cockpit. But
How did you think the Hellcat compared to the Seafire?
Well, much heavier. But having a radial engine with the cylinders arranged in a round, in a circle, in a sphere, it was much easier. It had a snub nose. You could see straight down, could see more easily. It was heavier, but the undercarriage was designed to not to bounce, to go bang and sit on the deck, whereas the Seafire, if you bounced, you did bounce. You know, if you hit a bit too hard, you just bounced up.
I remember you telling me graphically the first time we met about how the Seafire would behave like your baggage. You know, it would wobble because the wheels are too close together. Can you talk about that?
That was more landing on an airstrip on a field or whatever. It's just that the wheels were a bit close together because they folded outwards under the wing. Most other aircraft folded from the inwards out to give you a wide base, a wide undercarriage base. But the Seafire did ground loop rather easily if you allowed it to go off the straight as it was running along on the runway. It would swerve. If you had to watch it carefully, you didn't let it swerve because it's very difficult to stop. But the Hellcat...
Ground loop, I'm sorry, I don't understand that.
Well, it's going right off the runway onto the grass on either side.
Because it's inherent stability because the wheels were too close
together? Yeah, the wheel being so close together.
So it would teeter onto one wheel and then...
Yes. But for some reason, you couldn't use the rudder very much at that because the speed would be low, you see. And the brakes operated both wheels together. But I'd never had that experience. It was just a thing you had to watch. But the Hellcat, with the wheels going folding outwards from the center, was a much broader base. The oleos were tougher, and so if you hit the deck hard, they wouldn't bounce.
The oleos are the shock absorbers.
Yes. Like you get on a motorbike, on the front forks of a motorbike. And the hook came out behind, as I say, at the back, so it was much easier to land on. Seafires, I think it's true to say, there were more casualties, more aircraft losses from landings on deck and from bad hand and accidents from landing on than there were from enemy action. Certainly that happened at Salerno, which was before I got into the action.
So you're living, what's it like? Briefly living on this, where you're trained on the Hellcat, is it comfortable living conditions, good food?
Nice oh, yeah, well, the Emperor is a sister ship, very similar to the Hunter, and I started making new friends.
So, no, I meant the shore base training.
Oh, the shore base was at Dekela, you mean?
Yeah, sorry.
It was very nice. The mess, the wardroom was right on the beach, so we used to be swimming morning and evening. And even in September, it was quite very warm. But we went to, yes, I met the chaplain there and another pilot. There was a lot of coming and going there. But I wasn't there very long. It was just transferring to the Hellcat.
The training was easy. It wasn't.
There's no training. It was just adjusting, really.
Yeah, mm. Yeah. And you flew, what, you flew? Sorties?
Just flew around Dekela, around Alamein, to avoid Alex, of course. I think when I was with Hunter, we had a trip to Cairo and stayed in the old Shepherd's Hotel, which was burnt down not long ago. But that was just a short bit of leave.
Cairo had a reputation as being a real hell town, I seem to remember. Was that your experience?
Well, we didn't stay. We were only there on leave for a while. We went out to the pyramids and did the usual things. But I think that was with 800 Squadron. And I come to think of it, I got a picture of somebody on a camel, and I think it was the CEO of the 800 Squadron. But it doesn't matter. We did do one action there, about two weeks of operation off Milos, this island in the Aegean.
This is when you've joined the
800 Squadron.
The name of the ship was?
Emperor.
Emperor. Mm. And she was a bigger... What?
No, same as Hunter, exactly escort carrier.
Right.
Pretty well exactly the same as far as I remember.
Were there Seafires also on board?
No, or just one squadron of Hellcats, F6, F5.
Operationally to fly, you said it was heavier. What other aspects, if you had to compare it to a Seafire, did you?
Well, I mean, the Seafire was much more manoeuvrable. If it came to a dogfight, the Seafire would win every time, except possibly with the ME-109, but even there it had the upper hand. Not with the Zero. The Zero had no armor plating, and it was very light because they didn't worry about the pilots too much. But the Hellcat was much heavier, and therefore it couldn't turn quite so. I did once have a brush with a Zero in the Hellcat, and I realized I wasn't going to win very much for that. Come to that later. That was out in Sumatra. But the operating off Milos, we were doing mainly. They were firing shell bursts, which burst, not tracer, but this time was a shrapnel which burst in the air. And that was the first time I experienced that. You suddenly a white puff would appear, and poof, you sort of feel the aircraft judder a bit, where you kept weaving and hoped you wouldn't hit one, or they wouldn't hit you.
And these were German troops still?
Yeah, Germans on the island of Aegean. They hadn't withdrawn from Greece and the islands. They were in the business of doing it, and we were trying to help them.
And what were you doing, bombing or strafing?
Yes.
Can you describe a sortie? Or?
Where's my other book? I don't know quite what the action was there. I think it was local flying, aerobatics, cloud flying. The Keeler to Emperor, here we are, Hellcat. Dive bombing, mostly. Milos patrol, dive bombing, strafing. Fighter escort, escorting something, DNC, I don't know what that is. It seemed to be mostly dive bombing.
And do you remember any of those raids?
No, very little. Well, I remember the flak coming up at us.
How would you, I mean, if we go through the actual operational... Of a dive bombing raid, what would happen? You'd form up off the target, and then can you remember the?
Well, we didn't form up too much because you had to weave, you see. But we came in more or less together, and then you just say number two or whatever my number was, red two. I think we had colors for the flights, yellow two going in, and you. Dive bomb, and then reform back to the ship, strafing. That was November, October, November, quite late, 44. Hellcat, yeah.
And the Hellcat had a longer range?
Yes.
How long could that?
Oh, I don't remember now, but what have I done? 1 hour 45 here, 2 hours 10. 2 hours, you see, they had quite long range. 225 on a dive bombing out. Most of them were about an hour, between an hour and a half, whereas the Seafires would have been 45 minutes or so, I don't forget. In the other
book. You said 45 minutes. The in terms of the armament of the Hellcat, it had cannons, it had a much sort of bigger punch.
Yes, could carry rockets. I think it was four rockets under each wing, rocket projectiles under each wing. I think it had two cannon. The Spitfire, of course, had a cannon later in the later marks, I think. I'm afraid forgetting all the detail. You have to look up in Crossley's book or somebody.
No problem. I'm just thinking we're probably coming to the end now of the reel, so we'll maybe this is a good. I think I've got to change the mini disc. Yes, I have. So we'll stop there.